This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 77 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Fresh out of being irradiated today.
Oh, you had a little bit of testing done, did we?
Yeah, I had an MRI, so clearly, and they found my magnetic personality, so I think we're good on that.
All right. Well, David, we've got some interesting things to talk about this episode, including some breaking news.
I guess we'll touch the breaking news first, because we really don't know that much about it. Then we'll go into what we're going to be talking about the rest of the episode. But it looks like possibly Trappy won a victory, though he is forking over cash.
That's right. Rafael Perker, also known as Trappy, has settled with the FAA on the case that's been in the news so much for the last few years, I think. Under the amended order of assessment, Perker is going to pay a $1,100 fine. And after that, well, the case is over. Everyone walks away and there's no new decisions, nothing coming out of any kind of court conclusions that give us any kind of insight into any of this. It's just done.
Yeah, this literally happened today as we record this. So I'm going to reserve judgment till we get a little bit more details about what's happened. But it looks like everybody was sick and tired of everything and just said, okay, here, let's take care of the 10% of the original fine and be done with it.
It sounds like nobody had a whole lot to gain by continuing this. So the fact that they've reached a settlement and put an end to this is probably not too surprising.
So, but let's talk about real news. UAV training in Canada, followed by UAV training in Britain, a UAS, although the chairman said drone, R&D hearing, but no resolution on those nasty four letters, NPRM. A University of North Dakota study to UAS communications, and drugs on drones. Drugs on drones. Sorry, folks, couldn't resist. It just, this is one of those, okay, you're grounded files. And of course, we have a different aquatic video of the week.
Yeah, very unique video, I think. All right, so David, what do you say we get started with the news?
And away we go. Our first story tonight is from newswire.ca. First, unmanned UAV instruction designed specifically to meet Transport Canada's new requirements. Aerobotica, Aerial Intelligence, and Pacific Rim Aviation Academy have partnered to offer a UAV pilot training academy.
Yes, and this is a two-day ground course that covers the new Transport Canada knowledge requirements for pilots of unmanned air vehicle systems. Now, this is just for UAVs, small ones that are under 25 kilograms and operated within a visual line of sight. But the curriculum that they're offering here includes some, pretty relevant topics.
Yeah, standard pilot training, technical specifics of unmanned aircraft, industry practices and regulations, wonder where they're getting that from, and UAV rules and avoiding dangerous situations. So it's standard pilot training. That's the big one. And that'll be a theme in the next news topic also.
Yes. And in this case, David, we see that students who pass this training curriculum, they will have met the Special Flight Operations Certificate, the SFOC knowledge requirements. And then what they get is a letter of completion for taking this course, and they can then submit that letter of completion to Transport Canada.
Thus, they can begin commercial operations. Well, I don't know about that, but they're actually... So it's interesting. I mean, clearly piloting is going to be part of this UAV technology. The two organizations, Aerobotica is an aerial systems development and operations company, and operating out of Pitt Meadows Airport, Charlie Yankee Papa Kilo, near Vancouver, is the Pacific Rim Aviation Academy. And we'll put links to those two organizations in our show notes.
All right, David, our next story comes from the Washington Post. Now, this is titled, How Should Licensing Work for Commercial Drone Operators? A Look at Britain's Solution. And I think it's good to do this, David, to take a look around the world and see how this is being approached in other countries.
Agreed. The CAA, or the Civil Aviation Authority in Britain, has approved three companies to provide UAV training: Sky Futures, Resource Group, and Euro USC. And basically, after the training, the pilot must provide a manual to the CAA describing how the UAV will be used and to show they have proof of insurance, liability insurance. That's interesting that you have to provide a manual on what how you're going to operate your aircraft. That's kind of like flying a flight plan or such like that. So we're definitely stealing towards the piloting universe, huh?
Yes.
But each organization is a little different.
Yes, it is. If we look at Sky Futures, for example, the way they operate this is that trainees receive a manual, a ground school manual, that you take home and you study that generally for a month. The article says for a month for those who are brand new at this, maybe less time for others who maybe are pilots or have some other experience. But there's a sort of a home study of this ground school manual. And then trainees attend 2 days of ground school and then 3 weeks of flight training. David, you know, we've seen other people have problems with flight training for these short duration courses because sometimes the weather doesn't cooperate and that can be a bit of a problem. But Sky Futures has a solution for that.
But doesn't the rain in Spain fall mainly on the plane?
But I think there's a lot less of the rain in Spain than there is in Britain. So, yeah, that's a great idea.
So, yeah, it's definitely Spain is a higher percentage fair weather organization. The next one would be Resource Group, which starts with an online learning program, then 2 days in a classroom, followed by 1 day outside, then a one-day exam. It sounds like it's a much denser course.
Yes, it does. And interestingly enough, Sky Futures recently visited the FAA in the United States, and they're interested in expanding their operations to the U.S. So that's very interesting. We maybe we'll end up importing some drone pilot training.
You know, I might want to take a trip to Spain to fly my drone. It's better than bouncing it off the walls here in the house. Well, our next, I don't know if I should take this as good news, bad news, or just, again, this was from spaceref.com. Committee examines the status of unmanned aircraft systems, regulations, and research. The U.S. Committee on Science, Space, and Technology held an unmanned aircraft systems research and development hearing in January.
Now, this has been reported in the press all over. In fact, we received a number of emails from you all, our listeners, pointing this hearing out, and for different reasons. One of the kind of popular press items from this is that there was a demonstration of a quadcopter actually at the hearing, and it kind of crashed and broke a little bit. And so, you know, that makes for great headlines. But if we stick really to the, you know, the meat of what actually happened, what we have here is the chairman, Lamar Smith. He opened the hearing This was to examine research and development of UAS and, quote, provide an overview of how UAS research, development, and flight tests enable the integration of UAS into the National Airspace Program. And, David, as you mentioned at the start, Smith, he decided that he was going to use the D word, didn't he?
Yeah, quote, I'm going to use the term drone since that's how most people refer to them. However, the term unmanned aircraft systems is more complete and accurate term. Okay, then why? Yeah, never. It is what it is. It's. But he went on to describe the size of the market and jobs potential. The FAA will likely miss its 2015 integration deadline. Funny, if they miss their 2014 NPRM, that makes perfect sense. NASA and the FAA are working together to ensure a safe, successful integration in drones in the National Airspace System, the benefits of drones to society, and, of course, we've discussed this, companies have moved offshore to more drone-friendly countries.
So I think that represents, from a high-level position, a kind of a good overall view of what some of the issues are. And Smith went on to say that the goal was to better understand the research underway, he said, to overcome these barriers. And he said, we're particularly interested in hearing how government-funded and private sector UAS research and development informs or should inform the integration of UAS into the National Airspace System. Then the speakers, the witnesses at the hearing, included a really nice cross-section. There were representatives from NASA, from the FAA, the National Research Council, the AUVSI, the Small UAV Coalition, and MIT. And they all got to make presentations.
But they didn't invite the UAV Digest. We need to find out why.
We got to get onto that list.
We got to get onto this list. Let's start off with Brian Wynn, who is president and CEO of AUVSI. Quote, driving home the point again, but until rules are created, these industries and many others will remain largely grounded. And for every day that UAS integration is delayed, the U.S. stands to lose $27.6 million in potential economic impact, according to AUVSI's economic impact study.
Interesting. $27.6 million a day. That's it adds up day by day, doesn't it?
Billions upon billions upon billions.
And then
will the FAA ever learn?
I know. And then also speaking from the FAA was James Williams. He's the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Office Manager. And he talked about the usual things. He talked about the roadmap. He talked about the comprehensive plan, the interagency partnerships with groups like DOD, NASA, and so forth, all in the role of the rulemaking process. And he described a couple of examples. In terms of working with NASA, he said that air traffic control interoperability with the future UAS use of detect and avoid systems in controlled airspace.
NASA and the DOD are, quote, the technical standard that RTCA will evaluate and recommend the appropriate minimum operational performance standards for UAS detect and avoid systems for UAS to remain clear of other aircraft. The RTCA Inc. is a not-for-profit organization that serves as a federal advisory committee to the FAA, and we'll put a link to them in the show notes, which is rtca.org.
Yeah, interesting. I hadn't run across this, I don't think, this organization that's actually going to create some of these rules, I guess, or some of these proposed rules. They also mentioned work with NASA, minimum operational performance standard for command and control radios. And Williams said the FAA plans to use the NASA software and hardware to test the ability of those radios to function on smaller UAS with size, weight, and power limitations. He said interagency partnerships are fundamentally important as we continue to develop safety standards for unmanned aircraft. David, as we were looking at this, of course, there's still the big question. When is the FAA going to issue the NPRM for small UAS? And we kept looking for that question to be asked and hopefully answered in the hearing. And we have some dialogue from rollcall.com titled FAA Official Refuses to Give Date for UAV Rule. And the interchange between Smith, the chairman, and Williams from the FAA is it's kind of fun. Is it worth going through this, David?
Oh, I think so. Who do you want to be, Smith or Williams?
I'll be Smith. I'll start off as Smith, the chairman at the hearing, and you can be Williams from the FAA. Okay, are you ready?
Yay!
All right, here we go, Mr. Williams. When might we expect the FAA to propose some rules?
The FAA is doing everything we can to get that small unmanned aircraft rule out. But our main focus, of course, is to get it right.
But when do you think you might get that rule out?
At this point, I just can't give you a firm deadline.
Well, do you have a goal in mind? I mean, you've got a lot of people across the United States waiting. Do you have any kind of a working deadline or a working goal?
Our goals are to get it out as quickly as we can, as long as we get it out right.
Well, is a rule likely to come this year or next year?
I can't speculate. My own personal hope is we get it out as soon as possible. But it's got to go through the regulatory process that's been put in place by Congress, and we're working our way through that. You've got to understand that this is a very complex rulemaking.
Never mind. I can tell that I'm not going to get the answer that I was hoping for, but we'll take your word for expediting the process. So that's...
Thus concludes this week's dialogue with the FAA.
Yeah. So, well, I guess I can understand. It is complex. And if you look through some of the presentations given at the hearing, and you will get a sense for sort of the depth of the study, the amount of research that needs to take place in order to answer some really serious, tough questions. And, you know, you can kind of understand why this is taking as long as it is. But all that, understanding that, you know, the approach here is fixed. The approach that's being taken, the method for achieving this, for identifying the regulations for unmanned aircraft is, you know, by its design, it's going to take a long time. And we can argue about whether that's the right way to approach it, the right strategy or not. But given that's the process that's being undertaken here, it's going to take years. It's just no way around it. But that's not keeping people from, you know, looking into it and trying to make some good research, some good science, discover some new things. And we see that the University of North Dakota is also planning something.
Yeah, this is from the GrandForksHerald.com. New unmanned aircraft research project proposed by UND to take off. University of North Dakota plans to test new radio communications of unmanned aircraft beyond line of sight. The unmanned aircraft program at UND proposed the project, and the university's research oversight committee approved the proposal. So, we already know that University of North Dakota is one of the FAA test centers. It sounds like a good opportunity for them to implement that technology. Interesting aircraft are going to be flying, huh?
Yes, they're going to be using this Northrop Grumman Sand Shark. And the funding for this project is pretty substantial, too. They've received, they will receive $500,000 from the North Dakota Department of Commerce, and then a matching $500,000 contribution from Rockwell Collins. So this all is going to take place at the Lakota, North Dakota. That's pretty, it rhymes kind of, doesn't it? The airport there. Using that funding. Now, they also say that they may use a Boeing Scan Eagle later, but this all is supposed to start in June, and it kind of extends for a pretty lengthy period of time.
Yeah, ending November 30th, 2016, so year and a half. So they'll have plenty of opportunities to fly in cold weather.
Yeah, that's right.
But we could go down to Mexico, where they've been flying in warm weather, and evidently with... some interesting packages this week from our Okay, You Should Be Grounded. CBSNews.com. Meth-filled drone crashes in Mexican border town.
Yeah, this is an item that we received from a number of you. Now, the Tijuana police report that there was a hexacopter carrying, they said, more than 6 pounds of methamphetamine, and it crashed in the parking lot of a supermarket. Apparently, I guess it just wasn't quite up to the task of carrying 6 pounds of meth.
New way to get high, folks. Take your meth and fly it on a drone. Yeah, what else to say other than, surprisingly, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, has reported that 150 drug flights by drone were made in 2012 over the Mexican-U.S. border. So clearly, the drug cartels have caught on to the use of the new technology. Maybe we need the FAA to get in line so we can have some law enforcement to what to do with these illegal drones flying across the country.
Boy, you know, this sounds like a no-brainer for the drug cartel or, I don't know, anybody else who's kind of involved in smuggling things that aren't too large. I can just imagine, David, drones flying at low altitude, you know, at night, lower than radar, and being pretty effective. But if the DEA, says there were 150 of those flights that year, I wonder... Well, I guess they must be pretty good at detecting these flights, unless there's thousands of flights going on that that we don't know about.
I was going to say you might want to exponentially increase that number. They caught 150. How many did actually get across the border?
So, exactly.
Speaking of losing your drone across the border, not really a drone. It was a radio control glider. But our video of this week is from allthingsaero.com. RC plane crashes and reveals underwater world. This shows the durability of the GoPro camera. Pretty interesting video, huh?
It's another one of those spectacular videos. It starts off with footage from this fixed-wing airplane at the Cape Range National Park in Western Australia. And what we see are some really fantastic views of the beach and the water there. And I think that's reefs you can see underneath. It's all very dramatic and beautiful. And, of course, we've seen lots of drone videos like that before. But then things go kind of bad, don't they?
Yeah, they lose sight of the vehicle. And after quite a few turns and twists, it spirals out of control and crashes into said ocean. Where?
However,
it does become, my interpretation was evidently it landed and floated on top of the bay, but the camera attached to the wing was underwater. And what you get is some fantastic aquatic video.
That's right. You see some tropical fish swimming by, schools of them. You see, I think, one or two...
Sharks.
That's right. I saw a shark in there. Sea turtles. The thing is, you know, filled with aquatic life. Now, I don't know if that was heavily edited or not, but it really looks like there's a lot of stuff swimming around down there, and it really captured it quite nicely.
So definitely go ahead, check it out, and let us know what you think about our unexpected Submariner for our video of the week. We get a lot of it, and of course you know how to send it to us. It's feedback@theuavdigest.com, but we got some interesting feedback this week, huh, Max?
Yes, we did. We got a question from David, and he says, he asks, does airspace that the FAA regulate, does that apply only out of doors, or it could be indoors as well? And he says, I did a quick Google search for something that officially said that airspace was only legally defined out of doors, but couldn't find anything. He said, perhaps it's a question that never came up when powered and lighter than air flight were born. Yeah, my understanding, David, is that, indoor airspace is yours. It's a free-for-all, and while you can't fly in some cases outdoors, at least not commercially, I think indoors, the FAA is unconcerned about that. Is that your take on it, David?
I would say yes, but who knows what the FAA is thinking? I mean, think about it. You're flying a drone to videotape a basketball game in a basketball stadium? That's indoors. You know, I don't know. I'm going to hope that David was right when he says you can have airspace indoors. Then we may have the FAA in our kitchens and bathrooms, especially in regards to drones. Let's hope that indoor airspace stays outdoors and indoors is indoors.
And I think that's the way it is. But if anyone listening has a different viewpoint on that, please, you know, send it. We'd love to hear it.
The next one, we got quite a bit of feedback last week about us talking about the news story about the FAA and local law enforcement enforcing their regulations. This was from Stuart. Hi, Max and David. Always love your show, but I don't always love the FAA. Well, we have that sentiment. I'm afraid I just had to laugh while considering the FAA using local LEOs to enforce its own murky regulations, quote unquote. Although I'm all for reasonable UAV regs targeted training and safety, the FAA's combination of heavy-handed threats and lack of substantiative rulemaking is getting tiring. The memo you covered last episode involving local law enforcement is even more disturbing. Besides the general Big Brother-like aspect of it, two primary concerns come to mind. He goes into a little more detail about, you know, does local law enforcement actually have the real legal authority to enforce the FAA? And putting this all in practice, well, I don't think the FAA thought that all the way through.
I guess we should contemplate the motivation that the FAA had in doing this. You know, one viewpoint might be that the FAA wants law enforcement to go out and enforce what the FAA believes are the rules. Another way to look at it, perhaps, is that that's not really what the FAA was trying to accomplish. The FAA was trying to give law enforcement some information so that in the course of, you know, patrolling, maintaining public safety in their locale and so forth, that, you know, when they encounter a situation that's unsafe or that is causing some kind of a problem involving an unmanned aerial vehicle, that law enforcement has some knowledge, some basis for taking some action. And, you know, it's hard to say. I'm not sure what the motivation. I'm kind of leaning more towards the latter, that they didn't really, the FAA didn't really intend for the for local law enforcement to become the FAA's enforcement arm. It's just that, you know, when they do encounter issues, when local law enforcement encounters issues, that is, that may require some action on the part of law enforcement, that they have some basis to take some action.
But we'd love to hear everybody else's opinions on this. So go to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And definitely thanks, Stuart, for that in-depth analysis. I'll simply put, we don't know. I mean, and hopefully maybe we'll get some additional clarification on what the FAA wants with this. I kind of lean on the side of Max that they're not trying to build an enforcement arm, but more along the lines of here's what we're thinking and maybe, and law enforcement can help them. So
yes, we really want to thank Stuart for spending the time to collect all these kinds of thoughts. And, you know, David, one thing that our listeners could do sometimes that might make a lot of sense, especially in a case like this, where there's kind of like a lot of material here to digest and think about, is to post them either on our Facebook page or on our Google Plus community so that others in our communities could have a chance to sort of view the whole thing. So we encourage, you know, you all do that. Stuart, if you want to do that, I don't want to do it for you because I don't know if you intended to have it, you know, published in that way. But if you'd like us to, or in the future, if others have some thoughts on a topic that might be better read and digest, you know, please make use of those forums.
And we want to be a communication tool. So if you got ideas, I mean, send them to us and we can throw them out there. I mean, we've got a huge community on Google Plus. We've got a growing community on Facebook, and our Twitter feed is just off the charts. So, and clearly, it's being noticed because I got a comment that I made. We got a Twitter comment that one of the organizations appreciated our comments about CES, but wasn't really happy about the fact that I called their drone ugly. But
so they're listening, David.
So clearly they're listening, and I apologized, and I said, "Well, I've never been accused of good taste, so don't worry about my opinion." So, but on that note, Max, I think we should wrap this up, huh?
I think so, and we want to thank all of you for listening to us this episode. This has been episode 77 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. And if you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's at theuavdigest.com/77 for episode 77.
And of course, if you want to find us on Twitter, we're at UAV Digest. Facebook, facebook.com/UAV Digest. Google Plus is Google Plus, the UAV Digest. And of course, if you listen to us on iTunes, leave us some feedback. That's how everybody else can find us. And if you want some swag, we have a Cafe Press store. And of course, you know that if you'd like to help us fund this organization, we have a Patreon page. That's patreon.com/theuavdigest. Or you can go to theuavdigest.com and click the donate button.
And thanks to all of you who have done that. We really, really appreciate it. All right, David, I think that's a wrap.
I think so. So until next week, I'm David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.